Parashat Chayesara is such an incredibly rich sedra. I want to diversify a little bit. I'll take a look at one comment of the Ramban, sort of a medium-length comment of the Ramban, closer to the beginning of the sedra, and one towards the end, a short comment of the Ramban that has a lot of practical significance, a practical a spur to growth at the end of the parsha. They open Perachav Gimel, Pasuk Yutes. The Torah opens, of course, Parshas Chayesara with the real estate negotiations. The Arler in Cheskas Abatim. They opened the year by thinking about Kinyan Karka versus a riot at Kinyan Karka, that's sort of the driver of the whole Perak. And one of the paradigms of Kinyan Karka in Chumash, of course, is Avram buying the Maror Samach Pel from Ephraim. And then the Torah, at the end of all the back and forth, there's so much to learn, so much to glean, in terms of halacha, in terms of hashkafa, in terms of tikkun amidos, watching how Avraham Avinu handles himself. The dinam of kinyan karka and the Rav's famous drasha about the ger v'soshav, that balance that Avraham Avinu strikes in terms of how he relates to umos ha'olam and to outside cultures. And you see the Mishnayos speak about the elegance of Avram's midos and to put it charitably, inelegance of Ephron's hanaga. And then the Torah at the end sort of has a concluding pasuk. The Torah has a summation. So after Perachav Gimel Pasuk Yutes, after Avraham Avinu completes his negotiations and completes the transaction, and everything is signed, sealed, and delivered. Yachar ken kavar Avraham es Sarah ishto el maraste machpelo hi chevron beretz Kanaan. And after all of this was done, after all the dust settled, no pun intended, after the kinyan is done, so then he uses the property for the intended purpose, which was to give a kavod achron to Sarah, to bury Sarah in the Ma'aratz HaMachpelah. He Chevron Be'eretz Kanan. And that is Chevron in the land of Canaan. And this reads a little bit like a legal document, often in a shtar. The shtar you probably come across more than any other, hopefully, is a ksuba. Often in a shtar, this is actually a sugi, the closing parak of Maseches Bava Basra, is the idea of Shura Achrona. At the very end of the shtar, you review a lot of the key facts. Who are the parties and so on and so forth. So in the last line of Aksuba, Bichazer again, it's this Chassan and it's this Kala, V'Hakol Shara V'Kayim. So this almost rings like that. After this whole parsha of the Kinyan Karka, and Chazer is over, Avraham Avinu is bearing Sar Imar Sapela, he Chavron Be'eretz Kanan. Why are we reviewing that? This is not. It feels like a Shura Achrona V'Shtar, but obviously it's not Shura Achrona V'Shtar. So already after Chazer, then Maror Samach Pel is in Chavron, which is Neretz Kanan. We figure that one out by now. That was the thrust of the whole parasha. The Ramban is bothered by that. So Kishav Leva'er, says the Ramban, and his comments on Pasuk Yutes, Kishav Leva'er, Hasadeh V'Hamakom V'Ha'aretz. The Torah reviews which property it is. It's Maror Samach Pel, Sadeh HaMachpela, and the Makom, Chevron, and the Eretz Kanan. Ba'avur, Okola Parsha, Hizkira, Benechais, Ve'Ephron Achiti. Because throughout the Parsha, we're talking about people who are Chitim. Ephron is a Chiti, and the other people that the audience, they're all Chitim. So the Levikar, Hizkir Basov, Kihicha, Be'Eretz Kanan, Asherhi Eretz Israel. That's why we stress, although the people that he's interacting with are Chitim, the Chitim, the people who act with the Chitim, who are a group that primarily is from further north, perhaps even the area of Syria or Turkey, but the land that's under discussion, the Torah is stressing, it's Eretz Kanan, which is Eretz Yisrael. V'chein amar v'tchilas ha'parsha, v'kiryas arba, hi chavron be'eretz Kanan. Okay, so the Torah wants to make sure you don't miss that apparently important detail that this is taking place in Eretz Israel, in Eretz Kanan. Why is that so important? Mesa Israel.
the
Torah is stressing that that Sarah Hatzadik has passed away in Eretz Yisrael. She was buried in Eretz Yisrael. Ki achitim in mishpachos Kanan, because there was a group of chitim who lived in Eretz Kanan. So although we're hearing about chitim, this is taking place in Eretz Kanan. And then the Ramban suggests that maybe there's another contrast that's being drawn, not just it's Eretz Kanan as opposed to Eretz Ches, but also Lifi Daiti, Kitama Ksuv Me'ino El Lahazki Kihi Eretz Kanan, Lo Eretz Plishtim. That's the point. It's Eretz Kanan and not, we're not in Eretz Plishtim. Why would I think we're in Eretz Plishtim? I might think we're in Eretz Ches because we've been talking about all the Chitim, Ephron Achiti, all the Anshe Ches. I might think we were in Plishtim. We heard that he spent a lot of time, years of his life in Eretz Plishtim, and he was in Gerar for a while, which is a town in Eretz Plishtim. And then he went to Be'er Sheva, and from there to Hebron, and then from Hebron back to Be'er Sheva. So the question is, which country exactly are we located in? Alkein is Kirki Hebron hi Be'eretz Haknani Hayoshe Baharahu. Lo Be'eretz Plishtim and his Keres Lavim. Eretz Plishtim is to the southwest, but as you know from looking at a map, Hebron is north, significantly northeast of Eretz Plishtim. Hebron is absolutely Eretz Kanan. Okay. But then, he says, Hosef Basov Lo Diya Ma'arashi Bistea Machpela Al Pnei Mamre. We reference Mamre also, Shazeh Hashem Hano Deile. Okay. So he says the Torah is stressing what exactly where it is. But then he wants to take a step back. And he wants to know, but what's the whole parasha about? So I explained the final pasuk. It looks like a summational pasuk. So it's highlighting this is taking place in Eretz Yisrael. I might have thought that we were in Eretz Plishtim. I might have thought we were to the north in Eretz Achitiv. No, we're in Eretz Kanan. Hebron is Eretz Kanan. This particular location, Sedea Machpelah, is in Hebron, which is in Eretz Kanan. Why does it matter? Not just why does this pasuk matter, why does the whole parasha matter? Nichtav Azoh, and this is a very Ramban type of perspective. To zoom out, you know, from the pasuk by pasuk view to the parasha view. I don't mean parasha as in the Sedra Chayisara, I mean the parasha, the paragraph in Chumash. Well, why is this whole episode here? The Torah could have skipped the first 18 psukim and just said, Avraham, the middle, let's say 16 psukim or so, Sarah passes away. Vayava Avram, Lispel Sarah Lefkosa, Avinu is Maspit Sarah, he cries for Sarah, and then he buries her in Stam Achpelah. Why all the detail about the transaction, the negotiation with Ephron, Ma Kolarashazah? Nichtavazosar Parsha Laudia Chas, what larger lesson? What's the Toelas Ladaros? So Ramban said, Laudia Chasde Hashem im Avraham. Shahaya Nesi Elokim Ba'aretz Asher Ba La Gursham. The Hayachid. He says, Ramban says, number one, what you're supposed to draw from this parasha is you see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of Avraham Avinu. Who was Avraham Avinu after all? He Ba La Gursham, as he says at the beginning. Gave a social Elokim Echem. He didn't really belong. He was an immigrant and he was a Yachid. He wasn't part of a large group of immigrants. He more or less came alone, and he becomes a Nesi Elokim. They recognize him as a prince of God. Chol ha'am hayu korin lo Adoni. Everyone calls him my master. The Rabban stresses, v'hu lo amar lehem kein. He did not call them Adonai. Why? Shahaya sar v'gadol. Because he was a prince. What does that mean? To presume what the Rabban is trying to say is, lest you think that them calling him Adoni was just, Derech Kavod. Sir. No. Two people might refer each other as sir, and neither one is knighted. And he was being polite. Mister. He was being polite. So the Rabban says, no, this wasn't just a question of honorifics. They actually related him as Adoni. They actually saw him as an aristocrat, because he doesn't return the favor. This wasn't just a matter of mere politeness. They actually meant it. He didn't call them Adonai. He was indeed a Sarvagal. They actually meant this. They really saw him as a Nesi Elokim. Over the course of his years in Eretz Yisrael, he had risen socially to be a prince. V'gam b'chayav kiyem lo v'agad l'shamecha v'heyei b'racha. It says, you already see here, you're watching the way the promise that HaKadosh Baruch made to Avraham Avinu in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, V'agad L'shamecha, V'yei Bracha, you're seeing it happen while Avraham Avinu is still alive. So there's already two layers to this. Number one, to watch Chasdei Hashem, and number two, to watch the Havtacha. It wasn't only Chasdei Hashem in a vacuum. These were Chasdei Hashem that had been promised, and HaKadosh Baruch was keeping his promise. So to watch the way HaKadosh Baruch takes care of a tzaddik, that's part of what we're supposed to be looking at as we watch this episode unfold. And Ishto Mesa v'nikbra b'nachas Hashem. And when Sarah passes away, she was buried with great covet. She was buried in Eretz Yisrael. She was buried in Eretz Yisrael with a great pomp and a great covet. And that's also part of the V'agad L'Shemecha. We see Avram while he's still alive. We watch Sarah after she passes away. The way in which the neighbors treat them with extraordinary covet, that's the fulfillment of Agad L'Shemech. And then he says something else. The ki mekom kvurasa avos. He says, and aside from the episode, there's also the historical, the enduring historical fact. Aside from watching the interactions between the Bnei Ches on the one hand and Avram and Sarah on the other hand, it's important to know that that's where the others are buried. That's the other major accomplishment of learning this parasha. The Torah wants us to know where the others are buried. And then you might ask, well, why does Torah want us to know where the others are buried? Since when does that matter? So the Ramban's comment is fascinating. I don't know what the mocker is. He says, Ba'asher anachnu chayavim l'chabed mekom kvuras avoseinu ha-kedoshim. We have a chiv to have covered for the place of the kvuras avos. Over and above the respect one has to covet ames, one needs to have in any beis hakvaras. Ramban is saying apparently that there's a chiyuv, the special chiyuv. Interesting, is that this is an expression of kibra ve'im. This is an expression of kvod tamid chachamim. That there's a chiyuv to have respect, to have special respect for maras machpelah, because that's the makam of the kvura. That's the kever of the Avos Nimos. Fascinating. So far, Rabban says, you look, from this parasha, you see you're able to watch HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of the tzaddik. Avram, Bechayev, and Sarah Lachemoso. In this parasha, you're able to watch the Havtacha, the promise of two centuries ago, now it's come to fruition. You watch it begin to be realized. And the Torah is telling us, you should know, Maras HaMachpel is in Chevron, that most of the Avos Imos are buried in Chevron, and that's a place that requires this special degree of covet. And Rabban adds, he says, up until now he's been making his own suggestions. He says, if you look back, there's a Gemara in the end of Sanhedrin, Rabbi Tzeinu Amru, Shegam Zem in Anisyonos Shal Avram. Chazal comment that Chayisar, begin Chayisar is one of Avram's Eser Nisyonos. How so? Shebigish Makam Likbar Sarah. He wanted to bury Sarah, and he needed to purchase. Nisayon being, he could have punched back and said, "Rabbi Shalom, you promised me Eretz Yisrael. I can't even find a place to bury my wife. I'm spending astronomical amounts of money just to buy a plot. I thought this is my land." He could have said that, and he didn't. That was one of the Nisyonos. So presumably the reason why Rabban is mentioning that, not just to mention the Gemara, but that fits into this, it's yet another answer to the question of what's the toelis of the parasha. The answer is, not only are we watching Ribono Shel Olam, not only watching Chasdei Hashem, we're also watching the strength of Avraham Avinu. That you see how Avraham Avinu handles himself in such a princely fashion, despite the fact that he's expected to do something to buy the karka that he thinks should be beneath him, but he doesn't, and he goes through with it properly, and he handles them properly, and he doesn't complain to Ribono Shel Olam. And then the Ramban ends by attacking the Ibn Ezra. I think we mentioned when we got started a couple weeks ago that the Ramban writes in the poem that he penned as a introduction, as a preface to his Pirush Al Torah. So at the end of the poem, he mentions two of the Rishonim whom he plans to quote significantly. He says, Rashi is going to be very central to my work. Sometimes I'll agree, sometimes I'll disagree. But Rashi is going to be Yisod. And then he says, with Rabbi Avraham, I will have a paraphrase the pasuk in Mishlei, I believe it is. Tochachas Megula Va'ava Mesuteros. I will have open rebuke and hidden love. In other words, you're going to see me attack the Ibn Ezra repeatedly and vociferously, very vigorous attacks on the Ibn Ezra. You should, that's Tochachas Megula. But there's an Ava Mesuteros. You should know that deep down, I really love him, even if it's not obvious. I have great respect to Ibn Ezra, and you'll see me attacking him frequently. So here's one of the many times when you see that. He says, Lo yodati tam ledivri Rabbi Avraham. He says, I don't understand what Ibn Ezra is talking about, Rabbi Avraham, Ibn Ezra. He says, he also addresses this question. Ibn Ezra lived a few generations before the Ramban. He also was bothered by the question, what's the purpose of the of all the lengthy detail in the purchase of Maris and Machpelah? So Ibn Ezra says, and you should, before you even see what the Ramban asks, how the Ramban attacks Ibn Ezra, as we learn the Ibn Ezra, as he quotes him, ask yourself, do you see any logical holes? So he says, the Ibn Ezra writes, in the third to last line, Lahudia Milas Eretz Yisrael L'chaim V'lamesim. That the Torah tells us the story in detail to tell you that Eretz Yisrael is such a remarkable place, such a valuable place, both for those who are alive and for those who are passed away. In other words, Ibn Ezra says that the purpose of this parsha is to tell you how valuable it is to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Because you see here, the first Jewish burial, essentially, the first Jewish burial of Ravina was Makbid to bury Sarah. And you see, he goes out of his way, and he spends astronomical sums of money to bury her in Eretz Yisrael. Number one. And number two, Ibn Ezra says, Od l'kayem lo devar Hashem liyos lo l'nachla. This is the fulfillment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise that to Avraham Avinu that he will inherit Eretz Yisrael. You see, it's starting right now. Those are the two messages that the Ibn Ezra sees in this parsha. The value of Eretz Yisrael, even not only as a place to live, but as a place to be buried, and you see the fulfillment of that Havtach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not the one that the Ramban had pointed to, the Havtach of Agal Shemech Ve'Ibracha, but the Havtacha of Kalal Yisrael, the Zera Avram will have Eretz Yisrael. Anything you notice as being difficult about that? Yeah, Shmuel?
He had to buy it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like inherited.
He had to buy it. Let's take a look. The Rabban says, very good. Ma Ma'ila, so he goes, Al Rishon, Rishon, Achron, Achron. The first comment he had quoted from the Ibn Ezra was, Ma'ila's Eretz Yisrael. He says, Ma Ma'ila, but La'aretz Bezeh. Where's the mile in Eretz Yisrael? Kilol yon lichenel Eretz Acheres l'kavra. He's not going to take her elsewhere to bury her. What's Ramban's kasha?
Well, he lives in Eretz Yisrael, so why is he going to go somewhere else?
Right. The fact that he stayed in Eretz Yisrael doesn't teach us that it was a uniquely great place to be buried. You bury someone usually where they passed away. She passed away in Eretz Yisrael. He buried in Eretz Yisrael. If you would hear that the fact that he didn't go out of his way to instead bury her in China, or to instead bury her in Turkey, or even Eretz Plishtim, or Mitzrayim. Well, yeah, he buried her on site. If you would have heard that Avram and Sarah lived in Florida, they retired, they moved to Florida, and then when she passes away, he went out of his way, instead of burying her in Eretz Yisrael, to bury her, instead of burying her in America, to bury her in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, that's an expression of Miles Eretz Yisrael L'chaim V'lameisim, or at least Miles Eretz Yisrael L'meisim. But where do you see it? And then he said, yeah,
say that, oh, it shows the price of Hebron because he paid a lot of money to
Hebron.
So maybe it doesn't show.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. How do you come to Hebron? That's a good point. As we're making a good point.
Didn't
Sarah live in Hebron? Right, so that's actually a complicated question. It's actually a complicated question. Sarah probably, there's an opening Ramban. The second Ramban, the Parsha, Pasuk Beis, works on Vayavo Avraham. This is not our topic right now, but you may want to take a look at the course of Shabbos. Vayavo Avraham, l'spod l'sarav l'liv kosa. So where's Avraham coming from? Is he coming from the Akedah? Is he coming from Beersheba? Why is he not with his wife? His wife just passed away, and her husband was not there. That's not the type of scenario that we hope for. So was Avram gone briefly? Was Avram gone for a long time? Why was he? If he was gone for a long time, why was he gone for a long time? The Ramban works on that. But Emma, you're definitely correct. But Tama Sarah b'Kiryas Abba hi Chevron. The Sarah's death happens in Chevron. So in terms of there's no reason to move her out of Eretz Yisrael. There's no reason to move her out of Chevron. Where Avram is coming from is a fine question. And then, in terms of the second question, the second point that Ibn Ezra had made, that lekayem lo dvar Hashem liyos ol nachala, Rabban says dvar Hashem la Avram al kol ha'aretaya. Hakadosh Baruch Hu didn't promise Avinu Chevron; he promised Avinu all of Eretz Yisrael. In the sky and rock bizarro, Avram actually did not. Avram got is this is sort of the exception that proves the rule. But Avram bought a fraction of a percent of Eretz Yisrael in this episode. So number one, Shmuel points out, the fact they had to buy it is not necessarily the type of kiyum haftacha we were hoping for. As a matter of fact, that was the point of the Gemara Sanhedrin they had quoted. That was Nisayin for Avraham Avinu. Hashem Baruch Hu promised Eretz Yisrael, and now he has to purchase. And even if you'll see the purchase as a chelik of the, as a kiyum of the haftacha, but this is a tiny sliver of Eretz Yisrael. One plot of land in one city in Eretz Yisrael. That's not the Haftach in its fullness at all. This is a tiny fraction of a percent of Eretz Yisrael. That's the Rabban says he's not, here's his Tauchachas Megula, he loves Ibn Ezra dearly, but he takes severe issue. Ibn Ezra gave two reasons, and he thinks both of them, and neither one holds water. The Ramban, in a sense, gave shadow, or parallels to that. The Ramban agrees with Ibn Ezra. The Ramban agrees with Ibn Ezra that one of the purposes of this parasha is to show us a kima avtach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he says, you're looking at the wrong avtach, not the avtach of Nachlas Eretz Yisrael, which has not really been fulfilled here to any great extent, but the avtach of Agadah Shemecha Ve'yei Bracha. And along the lines of what Ezra said, the Ramban also agrees with Ibn Ezra that one of the purposes of this parsha is to tell us about the milus of Eretz Yisrael, but not the milus of Eretz Yisrael in general, and not the milus specifically of Sedeh Machpelah Asher B'Chevron, mila being ex post facto. Now that Sarah was buried there, this becomes a place of significance for Klal Yisrael, because we can be mechabed the Avos and Imos by coming to Maaseh Machpelah. Of course, when you go to Maaseh Machpelah, as we turn from here to the end of the parsha, as promised, we want to look at another brief piece of Ramban as well. But on the topic of Maaseh Machpelah, and specifically Ramban's understanding that the halacha expects us to give a particular kavod, as I mentioned, two points, two halachic considerations. One is if you're a kohen. If you're a Kohen, this past summer I had a chance to visit Maaseh Machpelah as all the Yitzhak Kohen went together. And we had a separate Meirv and a Kumzitz on the grass overlooking Maaseh Machpelah for Kohanim. Whether or not Kohanim are permitted to enter Maaseh Machpelah is a matter of vigorous debate. There's one Kolal or Yeshiva in Chevron that put out an entire Sefer defending the opinion that Kohanim are permitted to enter Maaseh Machpelah. It's a matter of vigorous debate because of our Masechta. And not only our Masechta, but our Perek. The Gemara later in Cheskes Sabbatim talks about Rabbi Bana, the Amor Rabbi Bana, who was Mitzayin the Kvaros. He had the job of going around and investigating where there were Batei Kvaros that were not well marked, and he would mark them so that Kohan would know to avoid them. Mishnayos tells us in Shkolin, I think, that the traditional way to mark a kever was with plaster, with sid, because it's white, it looks a little bit like bone. So that became the it's pretty sturdy, it's pretty durable. So that was the betkufas hatanam. That's the way you marked a kever if you want kohanim to know there's a kever here. When you saw plaster on the soil, you knew that was a sign of a kever. So the Gemara talks about it. Ben Ozmit, he was being mitzayin the kvaros, and he comes to Maris Machpelah, and he goes inside to try to figure out, you know, how large a footprint does Maris Machpelah have? He can go outside on top and mark off the full footprint of Maris Machpelah. And the Gemara says a whole tells a whole fascinating episode that occurs to Rabbi Hanan and Avram and Sarah and so forth. So the Pashup Shan the Gemara is that Maris Machpelah is a Tumas Kahana problem. Otherwise, why is Rabbi Hanan being Mitzayin? So the primary this notion that floats around the ether that called that tzaddika or not metame tumas meis is very hard to find a reliable source for that idea, and it seems to be flatly contradicted by this Gemara and Bavasra, and specifically in the context of Maras Machpelah. The argument, I think the primary argument to be makel is that the structure that's been built, you know, the building on top of Maras Machpelah, obviously does not go back to the days of Avram and Sarah, or even necessarily to the days of the Amoraim, Rabbi Banan, and the others, later. There's a couple of layers of structure that were built over the centuries. So the argument is that the way those structures were built, you have a valid ohel that prevents the tumah from rising up beyond it. It is true that ohel is mevi and chotzeitz. And on the one hand, if you have a mace inside an ohel, so the ohel spreads the tumah sideways, horizontally, to the entire underhang of the ohel. And that's called mevi, as ohel is mevi inside tumah. On the other hand, the ohel, says Mishnayos and Ahalas Talos, is chotzeitz b'fnei ha-tumah. That vertically, the tumah stops when it hits the ohel. It doesn't penetrate. So you can be on the rooftop if there's a mace in the building, at least in principle. So that's true. But you have to work out exactly what's going on. There are more details in terms of what sorts of, especially when you have sealed architecture, sometimes you have a problem with kever asasim. Sometimes the sealed underground architecture does not always work to be chotzeitz b'fnei ha-tumah. So it really requires figuring out that they're doing a fair amount of archaeology, figuring out what exactly does everything look like down below. So it's a little hard to really get the clear metzias. And it's not at all self-evident that a Kohen can enter the Maras Machpelah. And the other point to be very, very careful with, regardless of whether you're a Kohen Levi Yisrael, regardless for that matter whether you're a Jew or a non-Jew, is when one visits Kivrei Tzadikim, so it is a place of tefillah, and that's actually the mocker for that also is Chevron, because who's the next Jew? Who's the first Jew after Chumash Bereishis who we know visited Maris HaMachpelah? Kohen. And what does he go? Why does he go? Halafun Ashtatam Kivri Avos. He goes to Davin. Yoshua comes pre-packed, pre-armed with Tefillas Moshe, and Kalev Davins for himself. Where? At Maris HaMachpelah. The very next time we're going to see Maris HaMachpelah, it's a place of Tefillah. It's important to do that right. It's important to Davin Takarish Baruch Hu at Kivri Avos, not to daven Rachman Atlan to the Niftar. That is sometimes a natural human reaction. It's a very understandable human reaction. Rachman Atlan, not only Kivri Avos from thousands of years ago, but when it's a fresh personal loss, there is one does want to and should maintain a sense of connectedness to the Nifter. But to talk to the Nifter and request that the Nifter take care of me, so at that point, when you're asking Nifter to intercede in Shamayim, that you're getting to theologically very, very shaky ground. So it's important. When one goes to Kivrei Avos, it's a time to express one's emotion of loss for the Nifter. And from a tefillah perspective, it's the right place to daven takadosh, but not to address myself to the nifter. To address myself when I'm in a tefillah mode. And when I'm in a tefillah mode, I address myself to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu to accept my tefillah in the schus of this nifter, in the schus of this tzaddik. That's the way tefillah in at Kivrei Avos, a tefillah at Kivrei Tzadikim is supposed to look. It's a tefillah Takadosh Baruch Hu. One can daven Takadosh Baruch Hu anywhere in the world. Certain places are particularly propitious for tefillah. Kivrei Avos and Kivrei Tzadikim is a place to it highlights to HaKadosh Baruch Hu the person's sense of need, and it highlights to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that, you know, I'm invoking the schus of the nifter, that be taken into account, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers how he's going to respond to my tefillah. So those are two important practical points in terms of Kibbutz Tzaddikim in general, and Maris Machpe in particular. Yeah, Kiv, you were waiting. Okay, Ezra.
Do you ask the nifter to like say something to a chef? Like, you shouldn't like address the nifter at all?
You could address the nifter. That's something particularly when a personal loss, one is going to, well, often different people handle grieve differently. There's a wide range of appropriate, you know, healthy ways to grieve. It would be better. It would be, for some, this will be a very challenging, wrenching sign almost. Some will want to speak to the nifter in second person. That's totally appropriate. That's what feels right. But to make requests, it would be better to avoid. The truth is, it comes up in less emotionally fraught situations also, in a somewhat parallel discussion that posts can have about making requests of malachim. So it's clear that to ask Malachim to help you, so that's a violation of the Isra of Avodah Zarah and the fifth Ani Ma'amin. To ask Malachim to enhance your tefillah, to ask Malachim to daven on your behalf or to bring your tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that's questionable. Much of Kol Yisrael does do that. That's Baruchuni L'Shalom and Shalom Aleichem. That's Machnisei Rachem at the end of Lisi Ashkenazi Slichos. Machnisei Rachem, we ask the Malachim to please, you know, deliver our tefillas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever that means. And in Baruchuni L'Shalom, we ask the Malachim to give us a bracha, which a bracha is a tefillah. If I give you a bracha, Recha Hashem Yishmecha, that's a tefillah that's phrased addressing the target of the tefillah instead of addressing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a normal tefillah would be, I ask Hashem, please bless him. And a bracha, when a tefillah is cast as a bracha, is Yivarechecha Hashem, may Hashem bless you. Either way, I'm saying what I hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do. The question of to whom do I address it? But I'm not asking, when I give you a bracha, I'm not asking you to do something. I'm saying, may Hashem bless you. So, but if I ask the Malachim to bless me, that means I'm asking the Malachim to pray on my behalf. So there were Chaim Mivoloshin and Maharal, Prague and others were stridently opposed to that, because they felt that even that, I'm not asking the Malachim to do something for me, I'm asking the Malachim to daven for me, or to help my tefillah along, and they felt that even that was inappropriate. So it may not be identical, but somewhat parallel, many would avoid asking the nifter to daven my behalf. That's a question. Some poskim are comfortable with that, some are not. If you listen to Hespedim, you'll notice sometimes people will end with the nifter should be a male tiyosher, asking nifter to daven on behalf, and others will not for that reason. So the address of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu should bring nechama to the family in the schus of nifter. That is absolutely appropriate. But once you're asking the nifter to intercede in Shamayim, that's questionable. But again, but talking to the nifter, having a conversation with nifter, that's what the Avel feels. That's totally appropriate. Yeah, question.
I saw a shiur in the Menachas Yitzchak that he discussed this kasha, and he said that because it's such an important, like what he was saying, like emotionally challenging things for people, that he doesn't want to pass it on the shiur.
Right. Okay. It has to be handled with great tenderness. It has to be handled with great tenderness. A posek has to paskin with his mind and with his heart. Neither one should inhibit the other. Having one's heart in the psak does not get in the way of having one's mind in the psak. But how you deliver a psak has to be with great sensitivity. Yeah, Keith.
Why does the Ibn Ezra specify Maris Machpelah to everywhere else,
Yeah, that's another good question, Ibn Ezra. Why do you see Miles Eretz Yisrael in Maros Machpelah more than any other piece of land? I say Avraham Avinu spent time in. We hear about Avraham Avinu spending time in a number of different locations. He's in Be'er Sheva, he's in Shechem, and in Beit, and also in. Yeah. So what's unique about Hebron? You hear the one place where you hear about Avraham Avinu purchasing land. Yeah, that's true. So that's a Rashi quotes to the Midrash Chazal, that perhaps part of the subtext, if not the overt conversation between Avram and Lot, or between Roy Avram, between their staffs, between Roy Avram and Roy Lot, was a question of what's the status of Eretz Yisrael right now? Are we ready finalized? Are we ready actually have Eretz Yisrael, or it's been promised, but it's not yet ours, and we can't take liberties? That's how some understand it. Roy Lot felt that this is already Shal Avram, and since Lot is his heir apparent, so we can do whatever we want, because this is really our land, the Canaanim don't really belong here. And the Roy Avram are saying, it's promised to us, but it's coming to us, but it doesn't mean it's ours yet. Kadosh Baruch Hu told us it's eventually going to be ours. So to the extent that that's the conversation, so then it wasn't yet. If that's the conversation, it was not yet Shal Avram. Yeah, but certainly here you see that there's actually a purchase. This is the one time when the Torah speaks about Avram taking legal possession of Eretz Yisrael explicitly. Maybe we'll come back for more questions. There's a lot, as we see in the opening of the parasha, and a lot to think about. And again, the Ramban gets us, not only does he give us specific things to think about, but he, like we've been talking about, he elevates our thinking. He gets us thinking about the types of questions we might not have thought about beforehand. And repeated exposure to Ramban trains our minds and eyes to see Chumash, see additional dimensions in Chumash, and to wonder about additional dimensions in Chumash. Not only the question that of how do you understand the wording of a pasuk, which is critical, but also how to look at he challenges us also to think about a parsha globally, and to find in a parsha all sorts of different values and messages. The value of Kivri Avos, and the value and watching Chazdei Hashem, and watching the Rosh Hashem's Avtacha, and watching Avraham Avinu's strength. So I want to close our learning Ramban this morning by moving to another Ramban, a separate, shorter Ramban, very, very fascinating, and very, very, the lesson thereof is incredibly lemaisa. It's something that most of us, if not all of us, grapple with on a regular basis. The Torah tells us at the end of the Sedra describes the passing of our Avram Avinu. Begin with the Petir of Sari, end of the Petir of Avram, buried by Yitzhak and Yishmael. And the Torah describes in Perek Chafei Pasuk Ches that Avram Avinu passes away Zaken v'Saveya, elderly and satisfied, satiated. Usually V'Achalta v'Savata, you eat and you're full. You're satisfied that you ate, and then you make a bracha. So it's an interesting turn of phrase. To a person passed away, he was saveya. He had a full belly. He passed away with a full belly. Ma pesh razvar. So Ramban said a phrase that we would probably, if not for the Ramban, we'd just say, okay, he was old, right? Sort of move on. Ramban says, what does that word mean? So that word is teaching us something incredibly important. Shira kol mishalos libo. The Sava Kol Tova. What that means, obviously not that his belly was full of food, but that everything that he had hoped for in life, he got. Sava Kol Tova, he was satisfied, content, with all the goodness, so many different types of goodness that Kadosh Baruch Hu sent his way. He said, Sava Yamim. Yitzchak is described as being content of days. What does that even mean? Sava Yamim. Saveya Shel Yamim. What do you mean to be content of days? So he says, the days had satisfied him. He wasn't yearning that maybe tomorrow with more time, I'm waiting for something else to come my way. I'm gonna have to wait for it. No, he was satisfied. David passes away. B'Seva Tova. the Seva Tov at the age of 70. And he's satisfied with days, with wealth, with covet. And what's the point? So the Nan Ramban says, Kedarko. So first he works on the language. And then he wants to know, okay, why? If that's what the language means, now that we're sensitized to the language, that take is an odd phrase, and he gave us his pshat. So then you have to wonder, so why does the Torah need to tell me that? So he seems to say once again two lessons. For who see por chazde Hashem b'tzadikim umida tova b'hem shlo yisavu b'mos taros. I think this line is saying there are two things you learn from hearing that Avram and Yitzhak and David were surveying. Number one, it's chazde Hashem. You see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of Avinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of Yitzhak and Baruch Hashem. They had long lives full of various brachas. But also, it's not only noticing chazde Hashem, it's our melacha also. They had that midah tova. They were satisfied with the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. They were satisfied with their needs being fulfilled. They weren't yearning for luxuries. Ke'inyin shene emar bahem tavas libonos atalo. And he says, a pasuk in Tehillim. The David Melech described, here you have this Jew to whom you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have given him tavas libo. You've given him the desires of his heart. He had these desires and he got them. You gave them to him. But now that he points out that it seems like it's a steer between the father and the son. David HaMelech describes in Tehillim, Tavas Libo Nasatalo, a scenario where a person has everything he wants. But the son, Shlomo, writes in Koheles, Lo Kamoshen Em V'Shar HaAnashim, Oiv Kesef Lo Yizba Kesef, a pasuk in Koheles. Someone who loves money will never, Yisba, same Shoresh, will never be satisfied with his money. And Chazal comments on that pasuk in Koheles very famously, Eid Adam Yotze Min ha'olam v'chati tavosav biyado. No man leaves this world with even half of his desires in hand. Yesh biyado mona misave masayim. Yisiga yado masayim misave lasosa arba meos. You have 100, you want 200. When you have 200, you want 400. Shenemar oev kesef lo yizba kesef. I have a friend I've had for many years. Was very well placed in a major investment house, and he mentioned to me once years ago. He said, "I've had a lot of very bright people working for me over the years," and he said, "You see the precision of Chazal's comment. The pasuk in Koheles just says, 'Oev kesef yizba kesef,' you want more. Chazal talk about 100%. You have 100, you want 200. When you get to 200, it's moving goalposts. You wanted the 200, and you finally got the 200, now you want the 400. But they didn't just talk about moving goalposts, it's specifically about a factor of two. So this fellow told me that people who have worked for him over the years, he said, consistently, that's the factor that comes up. He says, everyone thinks that they're worth two times as much as they're getting. They never want three times as much, and they want 50% more. Almost invariably, they want a double. So that Chazal nailed it. But these moving goalposts that we have for ourselves, we do it to ourselves, and it's a source of incredible frustration. Now the Ramban is very subtly kedarko b'miyashiv akasha without actually asking it, but he was right miyashiv akasha. What was the kasha? The kasha was a steer between David and Shlomo. David says tafos libunos atalo. You have a person who got everything he wants. And the Rabban points out, not only is it a pasuk in Tehillim, it's Pesukim L'Chumash, Avraham Avinu, Yitzhak Avinu. And yet Shlomo says, Ov Kesef Lo Yizba Kesef, and Chazal's comment is no one leaves the world. B'chatzi Tavos Sibyado. What's this? Are people satisfied or are people not satisfied? What's the answer? The answer is what the Rabban already said, that it was a Mida Tova Behem, Shlomo Yisav Lo Mosaros. That they made the decision to not yearn for extras. They had, let's be clear, Avram definitely had extras. It's quite clear in the Chumash. Yitzhak had plenty of extras. David had plenty of extras. And they enjoyed them, but they weren't yearning for that. If it came their way, if luxuries fell into their lap, great. Because Rabbi decided to bless me with extra luxuries, they were glad to enjoy it. But that wasn't what they were out to get. That wasn't what they were seeking. That wasn't where their focus was. They weren't the Ohev Kesef. They knew what they needed. And they did want what they needed. And that's how the Rabban had opened Rakal Mashalos Libo. He got everything he had desired. But what he desired was a reasonable and limited list. And that decision, the decision that they made as people, as Bali Midos, to be thoughtful about what it was that they were yearning for, enabled them to have much greater happiness. As a matter of fact, Ramban writes this earlier as well, in the beginning of the towards the beginning of the parasha, beginning of Parashat of Dalet, the Hashem Beira Avram Zalkein Ba Bayimim, Kadosh Baruch Hu Beirachas Avram Bakol, Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed him with everything. With everything. So the Ramban there comments that there are certain things that people would naturally want. And one of them was children. That Avram had gotten all the things he would naturally want except for children. That's why he was still focused on that. So that's consistent with what the Ramban says here. Of course people have desires. And of course people have visions of what a satisfying life will look like. But it's important to figure out what's really important and what's a nice bonus. What are needs and what are wants? And if one is not misavel mosaros, if I'm not yearning for the extras, if the extras come my way, I'm glad to enjoy them, but that's not where I'm focused. I'm focused on the needs and the things that are really critical. So then I open myself up to real happiness. So then I'm making it possible for myself to be savea, to actually be satisfied, to not be on an endless treadmill, endless hamster wheel of the constantly moving goalposts. The one, if I make the decision, right, or if I slide into the decision of being misavel mosaros, so much as it seems like it's a ticket to greater enjoyment, it's actually ironically the opposite. Because once you get on the misavel mosaros track, and once you're misavel for luxuries, not just if they come my way, great, but that's what I'm yearning for, that's what I'm all about, that's what I'm dreaming of. Once I'm dreaming of the extras, so then, ironically, I'll never be happy with those extras. Once I'm dreaming of extras, so then the goalpost, I'm setting up a moving goalpost situation where when I get there, that means I'm going to keep wanting 2x. I'm going to keep wanting twice as much, as opposed to having clarity about what I want to yearn for. And that's such a practical, I said before, this is something that people grapple with all the time. You know, the capacity to be able to separate in my mind between wants and needs is one of the keys to success, real success in life, and real contentment and satisfaction in life. And that's what Ramban sees in already in Parshas Chayzar, that he was more than once. Avinu was Saveya. Then later on Yitzhak was Saveya. And David was Saveya. The capacity, and again, as I said before, to do this with thought and with balance. It's not that Avraham Avinu didn't take a vow of poverty. Far from it. Neither did Yitzchak and neither did David. They didn't reject luxuries that came their way, but they were clear about what they needed and what they didn't need. There are things they wanted. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's not the bullseye. That's not the target. When you have clarity of what the needs are, what the difference between needs and wants, then you open yourself up for real satisfaction and real long-lasting happiness. Yeah.
Two questions.
Sure.
Is it okay to not desire, but to want things you want once you have things you already need? Meaning, if you're in a position where you don't have the things that you need, then fine, I get that you should daven or yearn for things that you need rather than things that you want. Once you already have, let's say, a steady job and a comfortable house and a nice family, so you should just stop yearning for anything, or are you allowed to yearn for things you want? Or is there really no end to things that you need, and they're just not, and there's just a gray line?
In the Rav Sitter, the Korah and Rav Sitter, so they have a comment. I'm not sure where in what context Rav initially said this. Yeah, like I said, like they anthologize it, like clips. So they say in Bracha Rifa'inu, I think in Shacharis of Chol. Rebbecha Rafa'inu, they comment that we're davening that Kadosh Baruch Hu should heal us. He says this bracha is equally relevant if a person is healthy, because right now I'm healthy, and miyodeya, what's going to be in a day from now? Miyodeya, what's going to be in a minute from now, in a year from now? So we daven that Kadosh Baruch Hu heals, and daven Kadosh Baruch Hu should keep us healthy. So if a person, as you said, Baruch Hashem, has is zocha to all the basics, so he should yearn that Kadosh Baruch Hu should continue to shower him with the basics. I think one of the things that people picked up on that we, as a society, so learned over the course of the last 2 years, is that there are a lot of things that we take for granted we shouldn't take for granted. So to yearn that she continue to have a healthy family, to yearn that she continue to have a financial stability, and to continue to have a comfortable place to live, and social comfort. Not talking about fame and fortune. To be socially comfortable. To have a chevra among whom you are comfortable and people get along. Those are all incredible brachas. And to yearn that those brachas should continue. And they have children, Yivei Shamayim, children who yearn to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are incredible brachas we should not take for granted. And we should yearn that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to grant those brachas.